I never sought to be an election fraud investigator. Like all of us in this fledgling movement, I used to have a life. It was a peaceful, idyllic life. I used to make my living as an acoustic musician and as a mountaineer, blazing hiking trails and maintaining them, and as a field geologist, for I do have a doctorate in geomorphology, the study of landforms and the processes that create them and destroy them. I do have experience examining reams of data looking for excessively fast groundwater flow, so I know how to spot highly anomalous numbers in vast reams of data. And I did grow up near Albany, New York, which then had the longest standing political machine in the United States of America, and I did know that elections are rigged at the precinct level. But I didn't have any educational background that made me an expert in any of this. What makes me an expert on the 2004 Ohio election is that I'm the one who looked at the evidence. I only used four mathematical techniques: addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. This was an audit. I distrusted the results from Ohio on election night. When I saw Ohio Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell, coincidentally the state chairman of the Bush-Cheney election campaign, stride onto the national stage, and he said that there were 155,000 provisional ballots still to be counted in Ohio. They were from all over the place. It wouldn't be enough to overcome the margin between Bush and Kerry, and that John Kerry ought to concede. I thought this was inappropriate, coming from a man who is supposed to be administering the elections in the state, to pressure a candidate into conceding. But more importantly, I knew from the experience in Florida 2000 that there must also be many regular ballots not cast provisionally for which no vote had been recorded for president, whether undervotes with no mark or punch for president, or overvotes with two or more marks or punches for president. CBS News reported that there were more than 250,000 votes still uncounted in Ohio, and they declined to call Ohio for George W. Bush. They left it white on the map. Neither candidate could win without Ohio. Blackwell said that the boards of elections could not begin counting those provisional ballots for 11 days, so I went to bed expecting a long, drawn-out battle, and then the next day John Kerry conceded. And what annoyed me about that had nothing to do with the fortunes of the candidates, but the notion that some people's votes count and some people's votes don't. Now, 10 days after the election, I received an unsolicited email from Fernwoods. She turned out to be Karen Giles, who lives on a mountaintop in Pennsylvania. And she had recently added me to her massive emailing list and forwarded to me numbers from the homepage of the website of the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections, where Cleveland is located. She said, "Could someone please look at these numbers? This looks like proof to me." Well, the Board of Elections was reporting 250,000 more ballots cast than registered voters. I knew that wasn't right. So I called up the Board of Elections, and they said, "Oh, don't worry about it. This is a data entry error. It doesn't carry over to the candidates' vote totals. So I downloaded the candidates' vote totals, precinct by precinct. More than 1,400 precincts with dial-up access. It took 4 hours. So I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and right away I saw false results of a very different kind. There were extraordinary numbers of votes turning up in the columns of third-party presidential candidates whom I had never heard of in numerous precincts in Cleveland, the number one Democratic stronghold in the state of Ohio. So I downloaded the precinct results from the 2000 election as a comparison, and I saw that these were precincts that had voted 92, 95, even 98% for Al Gore in 2000. So these were clearly Kerry votes that had been shifted to other candidates. And I didn't know how, and I didn't know why, but it made me a witness to a crime. And my mother had taught me that a witness must come forward. Karen Giles put me in touch with Bob Fetrakis, the publisher of the Columbus Free Press. And I remember four things from that first phone conversation. He told me, "This is the sort of attention to detail that we need. We'll publish your work." He said, "This is the most difficult thing you will ever do because there is a different story in every county." He said, "This is the most important thing you will ever do, and this will make you famous." I did the work anyway. Bob Fetrakis has two qualities that made him indispensable in this investigation. He has a backbone, and he has a lot of contacts. He's got his finger on the pulse. And he gave me many leads, nearly all of which turned out to be true. The first lead I remember him telling me was the reason why there were such long lines at the polls in Columbus, Ohio, in Franklin County. We obtained records from his contacts at the Franklin County Board of Election showing that 122 voting machines were never delivered to any polling place anywhere in Franklin County. There were 68 machines never intended to be delivered that were left in the warehouse, and another 54 machines that were scheduled to be delivered. We have their serial numbers. We have the redacted list where those numbers are crossed out. All 54 of them were supposed to be delivered to precincts in Columbus, where the Democrats mainly are. And that's what caused the long lines. A shortage of voting machines that was deliberate and discriminatory. Lines stretching out the door, down the street, around the block in a cold November rain. It was a simple matter to calculate what the vote count might have been if all the voting machines had been deployed and had been equitably distributed. I did the calculation based upon the percentages of the vote that Bush and Kerry got in each ward and each town in Franklin County. And I calculated that the discriminatory allocation of voting machines in Franklin County resulted in a net loss of 17,000 votes for John Kerry. The Columbus Dispatch, in an attempt to discredit us, said, "Oh, no, 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 we think it was more like 15,000 votes." I regard this as vindication of my work. Thank you very much. Another disturbing story that Bob Fetrakis told me had to do with electronic voting machines. About 15% of the votes in Ohio in 2004 were cast on various electronic voting machines. In Franklin County, in Columbus, there were numerous complaints and sworn affidavits from voters who would push a button for Kerry and watch the Kerry vote fade from the screen and turn into no vote for president. By comparing the percentage of undervotes in 2004 with the percentage in the 2000 election on the very same machines, I calculated that Kerry had lost another 3,000 votes in this manner. But worse yet were the complaints from Youngstown, Ohio, in Mahoning County, where they used touchscreen voting machines. There were many complaints from voters who swore that they would touch the screen for Kerry and George W. Bush would light up on the screen. There had been many layoffs in Youngstown. It seemed surprising that George W. Bush would make gains in Youngstown compared to the 2000 election. And his gains were located especially in wards 1 and 2, where the bulk of the complaints came from. And there was one precinct in Ward 2 where I was able to figure out why this happened. The Board of Elections knew about it. They reported to the press on election night that 20 to 30 touchscreen machines were hopping from Democratic to Republican candidates and had to be shut down and rebooted. In some cases, they were left in use all day long. But there were six complaints from Ward 2, Precinct G, in Youngstown. Three voters stated that they had to scroll through twice or even five times to get their vote for Kerry to register, and this was on two different machines. Three other voters complained that they never saw a presidential choice appear on the screen. They never had the chance to vote for president. So they voted for the other offices and filed complaints. Now, shouldn't there be at least three undervotes in that precinct, no votes for president, three more ballots cast than votes counted for president? There were zero. According to the official results, every single person who touched those screens had a vote recorded for president, whether or not they ever saw a presidential choice appear on the screen. The only explanation for this is that some of those touchscreen voting machines were programmed to default to candidate Bush. And if you intended not to vote for president, or never had the chance to vote for president, you were voting for Bush. And right after I published that paper, I received 71 complaints from South Florida, from Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach counties, 2004, from voters who saw their votes hop from Democratic to Republican candidates for President and for United States Senate. And I never saw one complaint of votes hopping from Bush to Kerry. There were other stories. I received a phone call from Toledo from a woman who steered me to an article in the Toledo Blade. There had been a break-in at the Democratic National Headquarters, county headquarters, about 3 weeks before the election. The only thing the thieves took were the computers with all the get-out-the-vote information and all the information on campaign contributors, and this allowed the thieves to target specific wards in Toledo with various methods of voter suppression, such as steering voters to the wrong polling place. And it was about 80 precincts where the lowest percentage turnout were all Kerry precincts. There was an obvious effect on the voter turnout in Toledo from these various voter suppression activities that are detailed in my book. There were stories from red counties as well. In Miami County, Ohio, a strongly Republican county, on election night, after 100% of the precincts had reported, another 19,000 votes were added to the totals. And while the initial results did seem low, the final results seemed high. And This raised George Bush's margin of victory to 16,000 votes exactly, and left the percentages for Bush and Kerry unchanged to the hundredths of a percent, almost as if the optical scanners had been programmed to turn out that way and to provide a quota, a margin of victory. So I wondered, wouldn't this bump the percentage turnout perilously close to 100% in some precincts in Miami County? I had to wait until December 8th to get the precinct results, but yes, indeed, in Concord Southwest, the official turnout was 98.55%. 679 out of 689 voters allegedly cast ballots. It was 95% in a neighboring precinct, and only 55% in another contiguous Concord precinct, as if this remarkable degree of interest in the presidential election stopped at the precinct boundary. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever engaged in get-out-the-vote efforts, but a 98.55% turnout is impossible. You can't do it. And there was one other important story that I learned early on, this one from Cliff Arnebeck, an attorney working with Bob Fitrakis, planning a challenge to the alleged victory of George W. Bush in Ohio. This is what Reverend Jesse Jackson, before my eyes, famously termed the Connolly anomaly. It takes a bit of time to explain this, but it's important because there's a lot of votes involved. Ellen Connolly was a little-known African-American municipal judge from Cleveland who had never run a countywide race. And she was recruited to run for the Democratic nomination for Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court. And she won the primary and was on the ballot in the general election running against a well-financed white male Republican incumbent named Thomas Moyer. Now, both races were close. Officially, John Kerry got 49% of the vote. Officially, Ellen Connolly got 47% of the vote, a very impressive showing. But many more people cast ballots for president than for Chief Justice. There were roughly 6 million votes for president, 4.8 million for Chief Justice. So 2 out of 10 people who cast ballots for president made no choice for Chief Justice, and this is to be expected. Down-ticket races do not draw as many votes as the top of the ticket. So you would expect, since both races were close, that the presidential candidates, both of them, would get more votes than the Chief Justice candidates in county after county in Ohio. But there were 12 counties in southwestern Ohio, some of the most conservative counties in the state, where Kerry got fewer votes than Ellen Connolly. Not just a smaller percentage, fewer votes. In the 3 counties that surround Hamilton, where Cincinnati is located, in the southwest corner of the state, Butler, Claremont, and Warren, the 3 counties which between them accounted for George Bush's entire statewide margin of victory, there had to be at least 13,000 people, the same souls in the same voting booths in the same day, who voted for a liberal black judge from Cleveland for Chief Justice and for George W. Bush for president, or else the official results were not true and correct. And this would be a net, because some people no doubt voted for Chief Justice Moyer and for John Kerry. So really there'd have to be 13,500 more Bush-Connolly voters than Kerry-Moyer voters. Now, I interviewed Ellen Connolly. She never set foot in southwestern Ohio. She had not one yard sign in southwestern Ohio. She spent one nickel per vote received in the state of Ohio. And yet John Kerry, the most well-funded Democratic presidential candidate in the history of this country, could not get as many votes as Ellen Connolly in 12 counties. In fact, in 3 of these counties, John Kerry was awarded fewer votes than Al Gore had gotten in 2000, despite a massive increase in turnout in 2004. Al Gore did not contest Ohio in 2004. He pulled out of Ohio 1 month before the election to concentrate his resources in Florida. So what the official results were telling me is that in some of these counties in Ohio, George W. Bush got all the new voters, all the Nader voters, because he had been disqualified from the ballot by the courts, and some of the Gore voters, or the equivalent, or else the official results were not true and correct. Now, I wrote up a lot of papers during this time, and another one that I must point to here analyzed those uncounted regular ballots in Ohio. The 93,000 votes cast by regular voters at the polls, where no vote was recorded for president. These were mostly punch cards. And they came disproportionately from blue counties, especially from precincts that had voted overwhelmingly for John Kerry. And I was able to do that paper for these heavily populated counties in Ohio, precinct by precinct by precinct, because I had a lot of people helping me. My first radio appearance was in Berkeley on Larry Bensky's Sunday Salon, and enough people heard me that they volunteered to help. I had people who turned precinct data into spreadsheets and tables for me because I didn't even know how to make a spreadsheet. And I had another person, Ellis Goldberg, to gather precinct data from sometimes recalcitrant boards of elections. And I had Emily Levy to coordinate the whole project. So I was able to write 21 papers in 6 weeks and present them to the Ohio Supreme Court and be deposed under oath for 4 hours in a lonesome hotel room in front of a court reporter. Well, we never did get a hearing. There was no discovery of evidence, no deposition of hostile witnesses. In Ohio, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court gets to hear election challenges all by his lonesome. You can appeal his decision to the full court, but if there's no decision, there's nothing to appeal. So we never got a hearing, and I thought it came with rather poor grace and had the appearance of a conflict of interest for Chief Justice Moyer not to give us a hearing on our challenge to the alleged victory of George W. Bush, especially since we were also challenging the alleged victory of Thomas Moyer, because we had evidence in other counties that votes had been shifted from Connolly to Moyer. I remember in Florida 2000, there was only one lever of government in the state of Florida that the Republicans did not control. That would be the Supreme Court. And it would have been dramatic indeed if a newly inaugurated Chief Justice Connolly had convened an emergency hearing on January 2nd, 4 days before the election was to be challenged on the floor of the Congress, thanks to the courageous Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who died recently, who was the first public official to receive my works, because it was in her district where those Kerry votes were shifting to third-party candidates. Well, I continued to examine precinct results even into 2005 and 2006 because these volunteers had been so enthusiastic that they obtained precinct results for 82% of the state of Ohio. A couple of more papers that I wrote, mainly for national conferences, that I should point out here. I investigated some other Connolly anomaly counties, and two of my favorites were these in Auglaize County, where the deputy director of the Board of Elections resigned in humiliation a few weeks before the election after an ES&S voting machine company technician gained unauthorized access to their central tabulator. When I looked at the precinct results, I saw that John Kerry ran behind not just Ellen Connolly, but nearly every Democrat on the ticket. He got fewer votes than all three Democratic candidates for the Ohio Supreme Court, and got fewer votes than the Democratic candidates who lost in landslides for Congress, state representative, and county commissioner. Here's one example on page 150 in my book, Union Township, Kerry gets 188 votes. Ellen Connolly, 290. Ben Konop, the losing candidate for Congress, gets 399 compared to 188 for Kerry. In Mercer County, Ohio, another Connolly anomaly county, on election night, there were reports that the Mercer County Board of Elections had posted on their website more ballots cast than the total population of the county. Well, those numbers were taken down. And when I asked for the precinct results for the 2004 general election, they sent me the results for the primary. That's not what I asked for. I was annoyed, especially since I'd had to pay money for this. When I finally got the precinct results for the general election, I thought, well, why not compare them to the primary? I've got the results. And lo and behold, there were four precincts in Mercer County where John Kerry and John Edwards got more votes between them in the primary in March than the ticket was awarded in the November election, with obviously a much higher turnout in November. Which is to say that Bush got the votes of everybody who didn't vote in the primary, and every Democrat who didn't vote for Kerry or Edwards, and even some of the Kerry and Edwards voters, or else the official results were not true and correct. And there was one more paper that I will mention now that I wrote for a national conference in Houston, which I satirically called Log Cabin Republicans in Ohio. Ohio was one of many states that had proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot to ban gay marriage or anything resembling it. And we all know that one of the reasons for these amendments was to turn out the rural white evangelical base of the Republican Party who maybe didn't vote in 2000 and they would be more likely to vote for Bush than for Kerry. Well, issue one, as it was known, the ban on gay marriage passed overwhelmingly with 61% of the vote, and almost everybody voted on it. There were very few undervotes or no votes on issue one. So if issue one, the ban on gay marriage, got 61% of the vote and George Bush got 51% of the vote, you would expect issue one to get more votes than George W. Bush in county after county in Ohio. But there were three counties out of 88, by definition, an anomaly, where you couldn't account for George Bush's vote totals unless there were at least 10,000 gay-friendly Bush voters. And again, this was a net. There were surely many people who voted for John Kerry and voted to ban gay marriage. After all, the ban passed overwhelmingly with 61% of the vote. So there had to be many more than 10,000. Now, this is the paper that brought me to the attention of Rolling Stone magazine. And I got an email from Tim Dickinson, a contributing editor, asking if I would be willing to be interviewed. I'm a musician. That was a really easy call. So, I had a long talk with Tim Dickinson, and he said that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was writing an article for Rolling Stone magazine on whether or not the 2004 election was stolen in Ohio, and would I be willing to help research the article in addition to all the research I'd already done. So I traveled back to Ohio out of pocket as usual to investigate for Rolling Stone magazine whether or not the voter rolls in Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland is located, had been purged. It turned out that between the 2000 and 2004 elections, 168,000 names had been purged from the voter rolls in Cuyahoga County, including 64,000 in Cleveland alone, the number one Democratic stronghold in the state. More than 30% of the voters in entire wards